All right, so great pleasure to be here, and grateful for an opportunity to present this kind of relatively recent work. We've been occupied for just maybe by 5 months or so. So there are a few preprints. So the kind of story that I'd like to tell today is ideas to generate topological phases in multi-terminal Josephson junctions, in such a junctions where material constituents making the junction are themselves non-topological. Okay, so simple materials, but can we do something interesting in terms of states that we can engineer on a superconducting chip? All right, so it will be two parts. I'm sure that most of you know a lot about Andreev reflections and everything, but I decided to review some of the things because we needed some special details of different limits of these junctions, short, long, diffusive, ballistic. So I decided to condense and give you kind of an introduction to all of this, and then to extend those ideas and formalism to kind of modern devices that we are thinking about. And I'd like to tell you that we can engineer some states that in Josephson junctions that are analogous to, let's say, quantum spin hole insulators in 2D, or they are analogous to vial semimetals in 3D, and I'll then extend that to perhaps more fantastic proposals, but so we'll see. And then I'll finish with some further ideas where we can drive this. All right, so Andreev reflection, a key component to what I will be discussing today. So Andreev was interested at looking at the problem of the thermal resistance and superconductor normal junction, and he was just looking at the simple problem of reflection and discovered that this reflection happens in a very unusual way, that electron-like excitation coming from, let's say, a normal region to a superconducting region reflects back to the hole and leaves a Cooper pair and a superconductor. And then a few years later, Kulik looked at the problem of making a sandwich of superconductor normal metal superconductor junction. And if you look at this superconductor acts essentially as a potential well. And from simple quantum mechanics, we know that if there's a quasi-particle whose energy is below that well, there are states that will be quantized. The energy levels of those states will be quantized. And the kind of interesting feature specific to Josephson junctions is that quantization of those energy states, the position of those Andreev levels, depends on overall phase difference across the junction. And so Kulik looked at the pair of states in a clean, short ballistic junction, and he found this formula that there is a pair of states inside the gap per, I would say in modern terms, I would say that if you look at this superconducting wire as a multi-channel state and scattering matrix approach, that per channel in transversal modes, you have two states. And they exhibit this level crossing for a clean state with the phase across the junction. Now, if you forget everything that I just said and someone's bringing you this panel, and then let's substitute this delta by epsilon, let's substitute phi by p, and I will say that p is some momentum, it kind of looks to you as a bent structure of one-dimensional solid of some sort. You have a Dirac point in that at phase pi and special point, and the question emerges, can you do something about it? Is any analogy that you can evolve, okay, let's build on this, try to add more terminals, and this every terminal with superconducting phase will look as an effective momentum in the artificial direction in actual space. And so can you construct and engineer the bands of Andreev states in these multi-terminal devices? And can you engineer them in a way that, for example, such crossing points that would be protected by some symmetries or something, as I will explain in the next few slides, this particular crossing has nothing special. We can gap it by finite transmission through the junction. But the short answer to the question that I just posted, that yes, you could do that, and I'll show you some examples of it. All right, so I'll go not in historical way, but more modern way, how to describe transport in the SNS junctions. The most convenient and I think transparent way is to do it through the Landauer-Butiker and scattering matrix circuit theory that kind of put forward in some footing by Karl Beyernacker. So suppose that we have SNS. I'll stick to the system for a moment. I can assign multiple ingoing channels and outgoing channels. I need to consider electron-like and hole-like excitations. So by massaging some matrices, he derived general expression that is independent of the geometry device. The only important ingredient is a scattering matrix of this region. So if you give me a scattering matrix of the region, I can infer the spectrum of the excitations. And it kind of has simple structure. So there is a product of two scattering matrices at energy epsilon and minus energy epsilon. So this one would correspond to a propagation of electron-like state, let's say, from left to right. And then it reflects back through the Andreev reflection matrix and propagates back with the opposite energy, which is a Hall-like state. You go back, and then you again pick up Andreev matrix that knows about the phases. There is an extra factor here, alpha, that is an additional phase shift accumulated by upon the reflection, because electron-like excitation, Hall-like excitation, they have different momenta. And by that momentum shift, there is a phase shift that you pick up. And in the short junction limit, this phase factor is dominant source that gives you a quantized state. But in the long junction limit, additional phase factors embedded in the scattering matrix are the main players that define the spectrum of an excitation. So in general, this is a complicated matrix. So structure is 2n by 2n, depending how many modes you want to consider. So let's kind of make simple limiting cases. Let's say we would consider the limit of very short junction. So meaning short, I mean length of the junction is shorter than superconducting coherence length. So in this regime, you can approximate scattering matrix as being energy independent. So there's some collection of numbers, and this determinant simplifies, and you can find this determinant. And the only thing that you need to know is transmission coefficients per channel. And so this is the formula that Carlo found in 92. From here, you can recover the Kulik result if you take transmission coefficient in a given channel to be 1. So this 1 minus sine square root is your cosine over 2. And so this would be a spectrum. And for the finite transmission coefficient, these levels will have an avoided crossing. So you would open the gap. Then another detail that I want to show that will be important for the next slide is that if we'll be considering diffusive connecting region, then this transmission eigenvalues, they're actually a collection of random numbers. And in the localization theory, people know how they're distributed. So we can compute distribution function of those transmission eigenvalues. So this was done by Dorohov in 94 and then many others later on. And this is so-called the Dorohov distribution. A non-normalizable distribution, 1 over t, signaling that there are too many localized states, many states with transmission close to zero. And this is the precursor of the localization phenomenon. All right. So from this formula, we can infer a lot of information about the Josephson current and density of states. So let's say, let me make a cut through this line at a specific phase. And let me think about this Andreev state, this two-level system. Let me write a partition function for this two-level system. I would take z is equal to e to the power this energy over temperature, and plus another exponent minus e, but this minus. So then this partition function is quash, as for spin in magnetic field. Then I sum up over all of the states, and this partition function is logarithm of this quash hyperbolic. And then from there, I can compute a Josephson current, which is just the phase derivative of that partition function. And by taking the phase derivative log of the quash will give you tangent. This is just a thermal occupation of those Andreev states. And then because the phases of the spectrum depends on the phase, you need to take the square root of this derivative of this square root. You get this factor square root in the denominator. So it's a very generic circuit theory formula for the Josephson effect. And from here, you can recover some of the answers that have been known long time ago before this formula was written. And so I'll like to discuss some of that. So one is clean quantum point contact. So let's say we have n transmission and transmission channels, and not of them that are fully transparent, and all of the other ones are fully gapped. So then in this formula, I put all transmissions to 1, and then retain all n-naught terms, And I've got this extension, so I will get sine phi over 2 canceling 1 from between numerator and denominator, this tangent. So in old days, in some mesoscopic language, this is called Kulika-Milenchuk 1. Okay, so this is the result derived by them in 1972 or 74 from the Eilenberger semi-classical formula. Now we can consider a disordered quantum point contact when these transmissions are random numbers. And then we need to do an average. So I take this formula, and then I took this Dorohov distribution, and there are some approach to do it. And at zero temperature, you also can find an analytic formula, which is cosine phi over 2 arctangent of something. You wouldn't guess that simply, but okay, so there is an answer. It's called Kulika-Milenchuk 2. Yes.
Why do you say point contact if the geometry is this?
Sure. So there are three important length scales: mean free path, physical length of the junction, and superconducting coherence length. So when I say point contact in this jargon language, I mean that length of the junction is small compared to the superconducting coherence length. But this length of the junction can be much, much larger than the mean free path. Okay, so it's still point contact from the point of view of superconducting proximity effect, but not from the point of view of transport. And let's say you still can get localization physics inside junction, but they are short in terms of proximity effect. Again, more like a terminology of the field. All right, so this Kulika-Milenchuk 2, this is derived from Zadel equation. So it was kind of a follow-up paper that they've done. And then, of course, the most known example is just Andrei Karbaratov, saying that all transmissions are much smaller than 1, I can neglect all of the denominators, and I will have just conductance, sine phi, and this tangent. I put it here for zero temperature case. Okay, some examples and some current phase relationships. All right. So this is kind of a recap. We can also look at the density. We can look at the crossover, maybe connecting to your question. We can look at the crossover from between all of these cases. And again, this is accessible just in scattering matrix for the Tignet Eilenberger equation. You start opening the gap with you populate the gap by Andreev states inside, and then you form a band of those states. Once you allow more and more transmission channels, okay, we can work with details. Okay, so now I'd like to concentrate on the specific limit and look at some of the density of states. Now, the reasoning we look at this is because there is a revived interest to all of these problems by making superconducting Josephson junction with semiconducting wires, for the sake of looking for Majoranas, making qubits out of them. And it turns out that people needed to kind of relook at all of this again with a fine structure angle, looking at different features that appears either on density of states or in Josephson phase relationships, because they, for example, Josephson phase relationship controls non-linearity of those qubits. And so we kind of looked at this a little bit. So let's say from the point of view of semi-classical analysis, you can downgrade this scattering matrix to a set of Zadel equations. These objects are, so you start with Gorkov. You say that the typical length scales over which something changes are large comparing to the lambda Fermi. You integrate over the center of mass momentum. And then if you work in diffusive or ballistic regime, you do just a gradient expansion of this semi-classical wave functions and average over the Fermi surface. So this way you would get Zadel, which looks like a non-linear pendulum with three-dimensional, with certain angular momentum, and this angular momentum is a Josephson supercurrent. So for just SNS, you can compute this density of states, and in the very long, so let's consider the limit of very long junction compared to superconducting coherence lengths. So superconductivity penetrates just a little bit near the edges, then the bulk of the normal region doesn't know much about superconductivity, and yet the effect of the superconductor is non-perturbative in some sense. You still open a gap in the normal region. And this gap is of the order of Thales energy. This is how much you do, and this is sometimes called a mini gap. All right, so and this has been looked by many, but I think most exhaustive study was by Maxim Vavilov and Anatoly Larkin. They've done it in all kinds of ways. So RMT analysis, Uzadel, Eilenberger, all kinds of crossovers. And this was actually one of the first papers where quantum chaos was kind of studied in divergent trajectory. So it again become a very popular topic. Now, then I was a student in Minnesota at the time. So I looked at the opposite limit. And as a very naive student, I felt, well, okay, nothing probably dramatic would happen. If you consider a short junction, then you expect the proximity effect will be stronger, so you should have a bigger gap. And I felt that you'll just squeeze this picture, you'll make the gap bigger, the wink maybe more sharp, and then you'll find just a crossover to BCS. But I found something else. I found that to some very strange reason, this density of states is actually vanishing at the superconducting gap. Well, I had extremely big troubles reconciling these two limits. So I came to talk to Anatoly and I said, well, I have no idea what to do. And he said, well, if you have an answer for which you don't understand, then you give this problem to your postdoc and you just wait. And then when he comes back and the result is the same and you still don't understand it, then you give it to your student and you wait. And then when the student comes with the same answer, but you still don't understand it, you just accept it. So, I mean, I was a student. I haven't had a postdoc or anything. So I said, well, all right, I'll check it two times. And if I don't find mistakes, that's it. So I kind of checked it. I had a very hard time trying to publish this because people have been asking questions, what the heck is going on? I actually developed a pictorial understanding of what is actually happening. So you can consider a toy model, a quantum dot between two superconductors. And this quantum dot supports only one Andreev state. And then you ask yourself a question, what happens with the density of states above the gap once there is a formation of single Andreev state? And it turns out that the BCS bulk density of states get a correction which is negative. I mean, it's still subdominant to an overall background of BCS. But then once you start populating the states, you kind of take out the spectral weight of those states. And then potentially you could think that potentially you could suppress the density of states. I will show you a much more rigorous analysis just in a minute. So then when I had a postdoc and I had a student, so I kind of followed the recipe. I mean, not just that I wanted to solve this whole problem, but we had a reason. So a colleague of mine, Vlad Manucharyan, he was doing this local density of states measurement on superconductor, indium arsenide superconductor, Josephson junctions. He was doing Josephson, and so he came to me and said, well, I see these features of really suppressed density of states right at the superconducting gap edges. And so we decided to do a more systematic analysis of this. And so we found that it's not only suppression, but in fact, you open a secondary gap. You can open a secondary gap in this SNS device, depending on a certain choice of parameters. And the secondary gaps, they're sensitive to types of junctions you have, to set of transmissions. And it's also very much sensitive to relationship between delta and tau less energy. And you can get very different shapes. And we've done it right now with complete, I would say. So it's kind of a combination of sigma model and scalar matrix approach. But we, I think, characterize this device as pretty good for applications to qubits, and we can compute lifetimes of these qubits, nonlinearity of these qubits, and a lot of things that are more practical. It's not maybe such was an interesting exercise, but I think it was interesting to students to play. So postdoc did it in 3 months, and then I had to wait for a year for a student to repeat the calculation. All right, so then let's build on this to a three-terminal device. To a three-terminal device. All right, so three Josephson junctions connected by one random scattering region. I'd like to describe the scattering region by some scattering matrix, and I'd like to think in random matrix theory ensembles. It could be orthogonal, unitary, or symplectic if you think about the simplest Dyson classes. But in principle, you can right now think of any other unconventional Cartan classes that people like to think about. Now, the problem gets extremely complicated rapidly because of the determinant formula. If you allow many channels, this determinant is gigantic. And then you have okay, two phases to play and then all the transmission coefficients, very difficult. So I said, well, let's downgrade this problem to a minimal, meaningful limit. We consider single channel per each junction. So our matrix is a 3x3. And then I could still think about the symmetry of the scattering matrix, and let's do that either orthogonal or unitary case. So it turns out that if you stick yourself to an orthogonal symmetry case of the scattering matrix, and by the way, Hongi, so my postdoc, he found some group theoretic ways to parameterize these matrices in the most convenient way. And it turns out that for special types of matrices, there are mathematical theorems about so-called palindromic polynomials. So you can expand these determinants in certain polynomials for which there are some theorems. So it turns out that we can write this, I mean, this formulas that give the spectra analytically. I can give you a formula. It's a horrible formula, but we can solve this by hand. So in the case of orthogonal symmetry, we find that the spectra, these are right now two-dimensional sheets of Andreev states trapped in those junctions. We can find gapless phases, so meaning when the bands of Andreev states touch at some points. But these phases in the orthogonal symmetry case are non-topological. So I can assign a bit of curvature to this band structure, and I can compute a Chern number in these two dimensions, and we could do this. And we can do just a test. And so it turns out that for all choice of parameters that we find in the orthogonal symmetry case, this is topologically trivial. But once you go to the unitary case, the way to think about this is that you just have a magnetic flux that pierces through the junction area of this Josephson junction device. So you have an extra node. And so it turns out that you can, by tuning one of the phases or one of the parameters in a scattering matrix, you can go from topologically trivial case with a zero Chern number in a gap state. Then there is a special point when these two Andreev bands touch each other, and then the gap reopens. And when the gap reopens, you enter into the topologically non-trivial regime with a non-vanishing Chern number.
Sorry, I have just a very yes. basic question. So you've gotten into these random matrix ensembles. There, yes. These are describing the scattering matrix of this central region.
Yes.
What is the physical distinction between those?
Between ensembles?
Yeah.
So let's say if unitarity is the only constraint, then let's say for 3x3, you have 9 free parameters to parameterize the matrix. So there are no constraints. Now, if it's orthogonal, your matrix should be symmetric. Okay, so then you minimize the number of parameters needed to parameterize this matrix. So it's really a parameter space constrained by certain symmetry operations on these matrices.
Okay, so but does that mean something in terms of the material properties?
No, that's the whole point. As I said, I mean, material, this could be aluminum Josephson junctions.
Okay.
But you can play, like in all mesoscopic physics, when they've been playing and mimicking crossovers between different ensembles, then you can do with magnetic field, and then if you want, let's say, symplectic, you need spin orbit, so then you need, let's say, this region should be semiconducting material that could give you that spin orbit, and then you could do a symplectic ensemble as well. So this is relevant for the indium arsenide or any other popular. You could do right now more exotic ensembles, but for that you would need some other material ingredients to make that work. So with the simplest materials, you can do just Dyson classes. But I'll comment later on some more fancy examples. All right. So three-terminal. Okay. So then we had a reason to look at the four-terminal as well. Now I must make a confession that by the time we submitted this paper, we already started getting extremely nasty and sarcastic reports from referees saying, oh, here you go. They published 3 terminals, 4 terminals. When this is going to start? And, well, they've been kind of right to some extent, because at that time I was thinking already about the 6-terminal junction. And not that because I have nothing to do, but there are some reasons. I'll show you some more interesting maybe applications in the last slide. But anyways, there was a reason to look at the fourth terminal Joule junction, because then we have three phases. I mean, by overall gauge invariant, one phase is not important. You can always think it's zero, because everything depends on the difference between the phases. So then we have three parameters, right? Three phases to play with that should potentially mimic your three-dimensional solid. And so it turns out that we kind of found gapless vial-like semi-metallic phases. You need all three Pauli matrices to parameterize the spectrum. And we've done a similar, we've done a similar diagnostic to it of different bands that appear. And again, we can characterize them by the Chern numbers. In this case, depending on additional parameterization of the scattering matrix, you can realize either the pair of wild points, then there are regime and this pair can move into one, so you have a Dirac type semi-metallic phase. Or you can also have a situation when there is a special symmetry, you constrain your matrix more, when they touch not with a Dirac-like, but with parabolic-like touching points. So you could do that as well. So in particular, I'm plotting here trajectory of this wild nodes in a parameter space of superconducting phases, and there is this high symmetry point when this degeneracy becomes bigger and you have quadratic touching points. Now, the interesting thing is that these phases, they are, in some sense, are analogous to quantum spin hole insulators, and the way to measure, I mean, you can ask, okay, it's maybe nice toy models, but I mean, how do you detect this in an experiment? What should you do? Now, the idea is this. Suppose that I would apply, let's go to the AC Josephson effect regime right now. So let's apply voltages to this. And I would like to apply incommensurate voltages to the leads. Then the current that will be flowing will contain the Josephson current component when this Andreev levels breathe. But then there will be a contribution to this current in the adiabatic regime that will be proportional, believe it or not, to the Berry curvature constructed out of those bands. And then, so by sweeping these voltages, you essentially cover the whole Brillouin zone, again, in the parameter space of the superconducting phases. And by taking an average or phase integral in two dimensions, this Berry curvature becomes a Chern number. And the conductance, non-local conductance, in the topological regime becomes quantized in the units of the Chern number. So then if you adjust, so if you are in a proper regime with your phases, then by doing AC Josephson, you can potentially measure the things, hopefully. Okay, so we've done maps of supercurrents. I hoped, so I wanted some other diagnostics of the states. And I was hopeful, so I knew from the Josephson current phase relationships that if there are some non-analytic points in a current phase relationship, I was hoping that maybe having wild points will give you quantized discontinuities on Josephson currents. And it turns out that you can get these discontinuities if you do a proper cuts in the parameter space of superconducting phases. But these jumps in the current phase relationships, they are not really quantized. You can get them large, you can get them small. So it's we haven't found really a very distinct signature that you need to look at the level of Josephson current, but still maybe a good tool for an experimentalist to try to measure some of them. All right, so this is not an entirely fantastic thing, so our experimental colleagues are working hard to make these devices, so there is a three-terminal device in place in principle that's been done. So it's kind of a squid-type device with two fluxes, and you can measure. So they've been measuring tunneling conductance through this junction area. So I blow up, and if we blow up the square, tunneling conductance, and they do see the gaps. They do see a little bit of this suppression of the density of states near the gap edges. So it's not really in the regime to probe these topologies that I mentioned, but I think this is not something really far away from reality. So I think that experimentalists will find a way. They're extremely smart people.
Is it an experimental challenge to have drastic variations in the flux of micron?
Yes, biggest challenge is to have a control on your contacts. And you see, I mean, I'm playing and say, okay, let me make all transmissions one and they set all transmissions to 1. But for them, making good contact, all of these tiny features and some of the topological features are very sensitive to good contacts. In particular, some of them require, you know, transmissions close to 1, so you need to purify junctions. And for example, as you can see, they never are able to reach the regime of a hard gap. I mean, they do see a suppression of the density of states, but they never open the gap. So it somehow, again, this has been going on for a while, and for a qubit operation, this is a big problem, not to have a good gap. And they are trying to purify, especially the indium arsenide quantum wires, to the extent that you can have hard gaps. And this has been experimental challenge so far. All right, now going back to this fantasies about the things that could be interesting. So one is actually to think about transport in this devices. So as I said, if you let's go back to this two-terminal device at finite transmission when we have level anti-crossing. Again, if you think about the AC-Josephson effect, what happens is that your Andreev levels breathe inside the gap. They come together, they go apart, they come together, they go apart. And a few things can happen because this is a typical adiabatic problem. You can induce Zener tunneling between them. And people studied this quite some time ago. And you can compute this, so this inevitably generates dissipative currents. Now, what I told you as a story today, that because of the secondary gap opening, this level that in the ideal calculation touches the continuum of the states will decouple from the continuum. You will have the secondary gap. Then what happens is that you may have cycles. You need secondary tunneling, Zener tunneling to the continuum of states. And then you can envision trajectory. So imagine that I would continue this two more cycles. Then you can tunnel by Zener in the first cycle, or you can tunnel by Zener on the second cycle. So you have a trajectory this way or this way. And between these two trajectories, there is a phase. So then you may expect beatings of some Josephson effect and some fine-tuned features that you could do. And there are interesting, just many body problems, how to deal with Zener tunneling to a continuum of states and et cetera. And this, I think, Dima and Yuli worked on some of the similar tunneling things with Majorana devices and et cetera. So it's interesting. So now in our case with multi-terminal, you will do merging of bands. It's not a single level, but this will be breathing of Andreev bands. And so this could be interesting. So you can do two qubits or multi-qubit systems, let's say four terminal device, 1, 2, 3, 4. You can do a two qubit. And it turns out that for this Gateman qubits, meaning that you can gate the middle segment of the wire, you can do a very efficient two-qubit gates, and so we're playing with this. Now, about two things that are, I think, interesting, at least to fantasize a little bit. So it turns out that long time ago, Young wrote a paper generalizing Dirac equations to higher dimensions. So in particular, for some gauge theories, and he found that in five dimensions you can construct chair numbers of the second class. So there are hierarchy of chair invariants, and the first type of the chair number, which is an integral of the Berry curvature, but there are higher order chair classes that can be realized in only high dimensional spaces. They are fundamentally forbidden in our world, but in some higher dimensions you can do them. And the next non-trivial one can be fantasized in a six-terminal Josephson junction. So you can potentially try to play with this. Now, even in the single limit case of a single transmitting channel, this is still a challenging thing because we have too many parameters to handle. But we're trying to look at this a little bit. And then another thing which is interesting to play around, and there are a few proposals floating about this in the literature as well, is that because of the intrinsic randomness of scattering region and interaction, so in old days, people developed a universal description of quantum dot physics based on the universal Hamiltonian, right? So covering particle hole, particle-particle, and spin channels in the random matrix fashion. So you could think right now trying to have many, many, many leads. Many leads. Yeah, so many leads with random scattering and interaction that hopefully can mimic SYK model in this quantum dot multi-terminal Josephson junctions. But for that, you need, of course, some material constituents that have this Majoranus in the first place. So we need topological superconductors to make these Josephson junctions. And I saw a couple of proposals. So one from Dima Pikulin and Marcel Franz, they and similar in 3D topological insulators. You can play with that. And I think another proposal was from Jason Alicia and along the similar lines with Josephson junctions. And again, you can play with the random matrix theory to try to see whether you can generate needed ingredients for couplings of Majoranus. And this is interesting, I guess, as theoretical laboratory to play. But who knows? I mean, you can eventually find new things. All right, so then I'd like to say a word for thank you for my collaborators. This is all Wisconsin team. So Hongyi is a postdoc in my group, and Colin, a graduate student, and Maxim is my colleague next door. And thank you very much.
So for your Yang monopole, don't you need to have degenerate levels?
Degenerate levels. Well, Andreev states are degenerate.
No, I mean, what's the SU2 part?
Well, I mean, this is just for us, again, we just need the special band topology and curvature. I don't know whether this will work out eventually, you know, in this multi-terminal Josephson device, but maybe.
So what would be the observable? How would you observe it?
Ask me later. I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. But again, it's pretty tough to find, good.
Because it was this three-terminal thing, it was the DC current, right?
Yes. So in both three and four terminals, the rough answer that perhaps it will be still the same conductance that will be connected to the C2 chair number, but I don't know. I mean, this is in both three and four terminal Josephson junctions, I can relate them to a conventional chair number. Now, whether you could do it to the Haar classes, for that I have no answer.
So the Yang monopole would be the three-terminal case? You're saying you just apply the incommensurate voltages,
yes,
and then there's a DC from,
yes,
the DC current which is quantized, and that's going from where to where?
From one terminal to the other, controlled by the third terminal. So then you need the third terminal to get into the topological phase, and then you measure the two terminal conductance.
Yes,
okay.